Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. It's your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Aaliyah. And we are once again back with Mr. Joshua Toomey of the Talk To Me podcast, which is hosted by KnotFest every week. He's also a Twitch streamer, and he's been around for a while now doing interviews, and he's probably got one of the best-known podcasts, at least for interviews in the metal genre. So he's today for the third time to discuss interviewing with us. He's going to give us some top tips, give us a masterclass for free on how to interview. Maybe not a masterclass, but he's going to give us some top tips. So to start off, Josh, thank you for joining us once again.
Hey, thanks for having me once again, man. And at least I'm not that hack Stay Puff, so, you know.
Ooh, shots fired. Already.
Here we go, the drama.
Yeah.
We don't even have, all we have to do is just do beef the entire podcast.
I'm here for the beef. I don't know what, I didn't know why you guys were bringing me on.
Where's the beef?
Fuck yeah. Okay, cool. So to start off, do your beefiest nutshell version of who you are and what you do and how you're better than David, obviously.
Well, first off, I'm going to squash the beef with Stay Puff because love that guy. Hung out with him at Louder Than Life last year, had a beer with him. You know, you can't go wrong with that. And he's such a sweet dude. He's so nice and kind. So you can't say anything bad about Stay Puff. Actually, and I will say before I get too far into it, the interview you guys did with him, very cool. And I didn't know anything about him, a ton about his backstory. So yeah, it was cool to kind of sit back and just listen to him, you know, hear his story. And because I think when I joined up with the KnotFest Twitch team, I didn't know a lot of the other people. So yeah. I just assumed they were all like super famous. And I was like the weak link, you know? and then hearing him talk about, you know, he had only had a few, you know, not a few, but you know, he had a limited, Twitch experience but I'm glad that Matt saw his talent and brought him aboard. So
cool.
Cool. Oh, but for me, former Primer 55 bass player turned podcaster, started the podcast in 2015. Everybody has a podcast, so why shouldn't I? Started out interviewing my friends and bands and then reached out to publicists and started getting bigger names on the show and blabbermouth clicks and all that fun stuff. And then actually, funny story, along with his bees connection to KnotFest is I started listening to Bees on That's Not Metal. Reached out to him just to say, hey, I enjoy your show. Kind of kept up a friendly relationship with him. And then when KnotFest came calling for Twitch streamers, you know, he was like, hey, what do you think about doing a Twitch show? Which I was not a Twitch streamer beforehand, but just kind of did like a Twitch version of what I do weekly on the Talk To Me podcast. I am actually no longer on Twitch. I'm fully just YouTube and just doing the podcast now, which is I enjoy because I was doing three interviews a week. Now I'm back down to doing one main interview a week, which trying to schedule three interviews a week, and then we'll get into the research and the questions and all that stuff, a little bit taxing. So when we made the switch at KnotFest Twitch to kind of go more towards the YouTube and things like that, much needed rest for me.
Makes sense. Are you allowed to say why you guys went from Twitch to YouTube, or is that kind of hush hush?
I mean, honestly, I think it just some shows were outperforming other shows. I mean, there's still sure. KnotFest Twitch. There's still KnotFest Twitch streams. Yeah. Daniel DK still does his stream every week. And I think there's like a talent to Twitch. And I think Stay Puffed talked about a little bit too on your interview of just engaging with people and just showing up every week. And I'm really into the, it's funny. I pulled the co-host Chris Aiken on to talk to me to kind of bounce off of. And him and I were talking the other day, and he said, watching me do Twitch when I was by myself, he was like, I almost felt bad for you because I know you were just like grasping for anything. You know, I'm much more of a conversationalist. I liked the interviews were fun. Like, and I loved, you know, when people would come on and chat it up. But yeah, when you're just sitting there playing videos and talking to the chat room and stuff like that, it's unnatural for me. I don't have that salesmanship. Like if you watch Daniel Decay's show, Daniel's like a fucking madman. Can I cuss on this? I don't know. But yeah, he's just a ham sandwich on a mic. And so yeah, because we did the KnotFest Iowa show together. We did a Twitch stream from KnotFest Iowa. Went and hung out with him, man. And that Decay is like a natural performer entertainer, and he can ham it up by himself to where I want to be more what we're doing now, having a conversation.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right, I think my follow-ups are done, Aaliyah.
All right. Well, let's move into the interview questions. I mean, the questions about the interview wing? Yeah. So how do you go about picking your guests?
I am very protective of the show, and I try to get names on the show, you know, like that's the one thing I even talked to a couple of publicists about. Losing the Twitch side of the thing is I could bring in more unknown artists on the Twitch, and I could kind of, because I would always have two guests on the Twitch, and I'd always kind of do it like a show, like try to get the headliner and get the opening act and get a lesser known band on there. I mean, I found some really cool bands doing the having the lesser known band on, but I mean, I'm also trying to put out a good product for KnotFest now, and you know, justifying the paycheck. So you know, and since it's only one guest a week, and there's tons of people out there, you know, you can be selective with who you bring on.
So now to kind of dig a little bit deeper into that. So you're going after names and you're being selective, but kind of like how? What's the actual process? You just kind of go like them, and you're just kind of like, that's what I want.
Is there like a cutoff of like, are there certain statistics you look at?
Not really. I think it's more of a feel. I definitely would never want to be like, well, they don't have enough Instagram followers. So, you know, you don't ever want to fall into that trap. But I mean, you know, you guys send out press releases all the time, and you know, my inbox is full of them, and you know, all of a sudden you know a John Five will pop through, and you're like, hey, can I get an interview with him? Or you know, I think I just set up something with like Wednesday 13 today, which is going to be cool because he was in a band with Joey Jordison, kind of keeping the KnotFest thing going there too, and linking it up there. But you know, just trying to keep, you know, the bigger names on, and then sneak in a lesser known, or you know, like the Maddie Mullins from Memphis May Fire. Those episodes don't necessarily do huge numbers, but I really like that band a lot. So there's a fine line between, do I like the band, and is it a name?
Yeah.
So, Aaliyah, were you going to say something?
Go ahead.
Okay. So like, let's say you don't like the name or band, but it is a name, and you get offered this big name. How does Joshua Toomey go about deciding whether he wants to actually interview that band? Like, he knows it's going to get him the clicks, it's going to get him the views, but he's kind of like, on the band itself. If that's happened.
Kind of. like a band like Chevelle. Like, I'm not a huge fan, but I know that's a big name. And that was actually a KnotFest Twitch interview I did with the drummer. But looking into it, they actually didn't do a ton of interviews. And so I talked to him, and we actually had a lot in common. You know, we actually found out that, you know, we kind of grew up in the same scenes, and I kind of got him talking about his early days, like in the Chicago punk rock, going to see punk rock and hardcore shows, which you wouldn't think that the dude in Chevelle likes punk rock and hardcore. So we were talking about that and stuff. So there's like the fine line of, you know, I know it's a name, and I need an interview this week. So it's like even Theory of a Dead Man. I had the singer of Theory of a Dead Man on, which I would never go after, but it was offered. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, it was offered a few times, and I kept kind of going around and around with it. But then I listened to a couple of interviews with him, and I was like, this guy actually kind of gets it. Like he understands where like his band and they might be kind of the butt of some jokes, you know? So I even asked him as a joke, you know, I asked him, you know, when did they start writing music geared towards getting girls to the show? And he laughed it off, and he actually had a really good answer. He said, you know, when their second guitar player joined the band, he was like, we're not going to write any chick songs. We're going to be heavy and blah, blah, blah. And on their second album, I guess they had a little bit more of a ballad. And every time they would play that ballad, all the girls would come to the front of the stage and, you know, arms in the air and the wooing and everything else. And the guitar player came back to him later. We need to write more chick songs. he got it. And I think he didn't take himself too seriously. So it ended up being a fun interview.
I don't know how anybody could even listen to Old Theory of a Dead Man and even think that they take themselves seriously.
Right.
The songs are just so over the top goofy. It's like, you know, there's no way they could take themselves seriously. Old Theory of a Dead Man.
Are you guys both in Canada? Or just
no, Aaliyah's in Chicago, which is like part of Canada.
Oh, well.
No. We have American freedom here.
That's true. what were you going to say?
Well, I was just saying, because, you know, Theory is obviously a Canadian band. So we talked a little bit of Grey Cup, you know, because they played a Grey Cup halftime and things like that. So, and then even obviously with the Chevelle thing, you know, he grew up in Chicago going to like Fireside Bowl and going to see, you know, hardcore shows at the hardcore shows in Chicago. So, yeah, we'll get into that, I guess, with the, you know, how do you find, you know, things to talk about with the guests. But yeah, you can go there.
Cool. We're only on question number two. I was thinking we were on question number three or four. Wow. I was skipping ahead. Okay, so let's talk about research for a second here then. So do you do research, number one?
Yes.
You do. Okay, good. Because the rest of the question would not make any sense if you do. So how much research do you actually do? This is a two-part question. I'm going to ask this first. How much research do you actually do in order to prep for a guest on average?
On average, I do, if it's a guest I know enough about, I don't do a ton. Do I write down questions and stuff too?
Yeah.
But if it's somebody that I don't know, I'll scour the internet, you know, looking for anything that I can, and this is another thing, anything that I can personally relate to. Like if they played a show in a city that I played, or if they've toured with a band that I know, or if I find out that they're fans of something that I'm a fan of, like I try to find anything personal I can attach myself to.
Cool.
And kind of go from there, because, you know, you start getting a feel for people that way. But yeah, like I know we keep going back to like Theory of a Dead Man, but yeah, I didn't know anything about that band. So I go to the Wikipedia, I'm scouring, I see the Grey Cup, I like football, so we can kind of talk about that. The Super Bowl halftime show, I think either had just happened or was about to happen. So kind of a correlation there, and how, you know, the process of that, because, you know, that's something that I think a lot of people don't understand, but do, you know, would like to know, because everybody, that was the thing, is he was saying that the only thing that was live during his performance was his vocals, which is the same for the Super Bowl. You know, and the vocals might not even be live on some of that stuff, but he kind of broke down like why. And it's because you see people all the time like, oh, they didn't even play their instruments. And you're like, well, they got like 12 minutes to put on a performance, and you know, they don't have time to sound check, and they want it to sound good. And you know, they're paying millions of dollars to do the performance, and it goes on and on from there. But yeah.
So there's a little bit more I want to dig into just on with what you just said.
Okay.
Before the second part. So, all right. So in terms of time though, how much time would you say for someone like Theory of a Dead Man, do you think you have to put in to actually prep for a 45-minute, hour-long interview?
With someone like that, I'm gonna go to my podcast app. I'm gonna see if they've done other interviews. I'm gonna listen to those interviews to kind of get a cadence of the guy, see if he's a talker, if he's not a talker, how many questions, or we'll get to that, but how many topics do I need to kind of get through? You know, if they're a yes and no kind of band, you're like, ugh, that's going to be tough. Yeah. But if they have stories, you know, you can go from there with are they going to be able to tell a good story? Do you hear another story on another podcast that you would have went a different direction with? Like, I heard you recently talk about going to Starbucks in this one city. I was actually curious on, you know, when you talked to that person, did you do that? You know, the other host may be going a different direction, so you can kind of pull from that too. So I'll definitely over prep on somebody like that, put in a few hours of actual internet time. And then with the day job, I can listen to podcasts a lot of times. So I'll throw in an episode or two of the guest on another show and then kind of jot down stuff as we go. But I've obviously, this will be this in, what is it, in September, I think it'll be 7 years of doing the show, which is crazy to me. But I feel like I can kind of, you know, start the interview here, get it to a point, and then wrap it up. You know, there's a peak and a valley there. You know, start out with, if it's John 5 is going on tour, hey, I see you're going on tour, blah, blah, blah. You know, what do the VIP packages entail? I just saw you played a show in Mexico City. How was that? How was getting out of the country with COVID? Blah, 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 blah. You know, you can get a big chunk of time out of the way, get in a few fun questions, and then wrap it up with, you know, hey, you know, make sure to go check out John 5 on tour, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think I've got a rhythm to interviews now. So
fair. So a couple hours usually in prep time for roughly a 1 hour interview. So I'm going to let Aaliyah go into her question, because I think my next follow-up is going to be more tied into a different question.
Sure. And you already mentioned that it kind of depends on the type of guest, but so maybe you could say, like, depending on the type of guest, how many questions do you tend to try to prepare?
See, that's where we go. I don't actually have questions written down. I've got a lot of bullet points of, you know, I'll definitely, you know, I've got these little yellow legal pads, like they're small, you know, artist at the top, new album, whatever it's called, release date, maybe throw on the record label. If they have a tour coming up, you know, make sure all the pertinent information at the top. And then that's when you go into the bio of the album and say, you know, I saw you worked with Machine on this album, man. What's it like working with him? Because I really like the albums he did with this band, and, you know, and things like that. So you can, I try to get enough bullet points to kind of, like I said, you know, do the arc of the interview, and then hopefully have a few left over at the end. Because there's definitely been times where you get through like 15 minutes and you're done. I'll give you this story. I interviewed Doyle from the Misfits years ago in person on his, on his little tour bus thing. He had one of those travel tour bus deals. We did 9 minutes. I went through everything on my list. He just didn't talk. But
insane.
But so like 9 minutes later, I'm like, all right, well, have a good show. Like, you know, he's socially awkward. Like, I had to wait for him to get into full Doyle regalia. Like, he didn't just throw a hat on and do the interview. Like, he was Doyle, right? You know, which is also intimidating too. But I think I got more pull from the photo that him and I did together than the actual interview we did, because it was a tough interview. But I knew it was a tough interview going in, so it wasn't a shock.
So did you have like more topics prepared knowing that still it was really short?
Pretty much, yeah. It was like, I couldn't get him talking. That's the one thing that was the problem, is I couldn't get him to really elaborate on all the list of things I had. So I also kind of felt it. You kind of feel it too. You're like, this just really isn't going to go anywhere. So let's kind of wrap it up and get out of there.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Have you ever, I don't think I asked you this the last time, but if I did, apologies, because I've forgotten. Have you ever accidentally lost the interview because it went so bad? Really? For real, for truth, only between us and the rest of the business?
Yeah, I did an interview at Loud, the first year I covered Louder Than Life. I did an interview that was so bad. Yep. That I just never released it. Like it just went nowhere. And like, even like the, like, I really feel like I even looked at the artist and was like, this is over, right? And he's like, yeah. Like, we both just knew it wasn't going anywhere. So we were like, all right, well, let's just call it a day and shake hands and walk away. So technically that interview was never posted. The first interview I did with Lena Scissorhands from Infected Rain, I used to carry before I did all video interviews, I would do some of my interviews from work with my podcast, a little mixing board deal that I have. And the way it was set up, it was like track one and track eight had to be recording. We did like a 45 minute interview. I looked down and I had track one and track seven. So basically the interview was me and then blank space and then me. So,
oh no.
But luckily I've interviewed, I think, her twice since then. So, but
well, I felt so bad. You want Knotfest interview her at one point. I know that. So, and that one went really well. That one went really well. So what did you say to the publicist? Were you just like, I fucked up, or like,
yeah, I mean, cause it was a thing. Hey, can we, you know, I messed up. Can we reschedule? Blah, blah, blah. You know, that whole thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, technical things happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does. Okay. I'm just thinking before the next one, if there's anything else I want to ask about that. Aaliyah,
did we have that situation, what did you like, did you tell her in the minute, in the middle of the interview, what had happened? Or did you just kind of like finish it and then talk to the publicist about
I finished it. Yeah. I finished it not knowing I didn't record it. Like it wasn't, I looked down, because had I realized it mid interview, I would have just stopped the interview, started over. And it, you know, if we had 30 minutes, done 15 and just pulled one of those.
One question I do have on that. So I don't know if this happens to you very much, but when you get told that you have a certain time limit, are you watching the time on how much time you got? You just kind of like go with it, or how do you do it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always respectful of, like, if I've got a 30 minute interview, I really try to pull out at like 27, because the way that they stack these interviews, it's like 9 to 9:30, 9:30 to 10, you know, give them a second to breathe in between, you know? So it's, you know, if I know that I'm the last interview of the day or something like that, I might say, hey, you got time for a couple more, or, you know, to give them the option to say, actually, I got to run, I got to blah, blah, blah. If the conversation is going well. But for the most part, I've really gotten into just kind of keeping it 30 to 45 minutes, unless it's, you know, someone I know or a talker or something like that, because, you know, attention spans.
Yeah, no, I get it. Have you, okay, let's, I want to go to the next one, unless Leah's got a follow-up on that one. No?
Kind of, but.
Go ahead.
It's kind of a open-ended question, but are there any other tips that you would give for people doing interviews, like courtesy tips, like being respectful of your interviewee's time? Are there any other tips that you would give that people might not think of, you know?
Well, I recently had a guest on, and one of the artists he worked with in the past has come up with some allegations. So before the interview started, I just said, hey, is X off the table? And he sat there for a second and he goes, yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about him. Like, you don't want to blindside somebody with, hey, this guy you used to work for is a scumbag, you know, unless they're willing to talk about it, or they bring it up themselves. Cause there's been many a time where publicists will say X bandmate is off the table, please don't talk about him. And then they start talking about him and you're like, well, I guess it's okay to talk about him. So, you know, like that type of stuff. So just kind of be, you know, wary of not burning bridges. You know, you can try for the easy clickbait whatnot nonsense, but that'll also get around too.
So, all right. So what do you do? So let's say you're doing an interview, like you kind of brought up Doyle already, but guest is just not talking. They will not talk. They will not do anything more than yes or no, no matter what you say. You're 2 minutes in the interview, 3 minutes in the interview, you know it's going bad so far. How do you get them to talk? What are there any tips you have for that?
I don't really feel like I've dealt with that too much. I mean, the Doyle thing is kind of an anomaly. And like I said, going into it, I knew he was a tough one. Like I had friends interview him and, you know, we talk. So, so once it hit 9-10 minutes, I was like, all right, I got enough. We'll cut it here. But I can't say that I've had too many interviews of people just not wanting to be there. So,
well, if you did, what would you do to get them to talk, do you think, if that were to happen? You're live on the air, freaking, you got some right. on, you got to get 20 minutes out of them. And it's just like, yep, nope, yep, nope.
Ooh, if I was live on the air, I don't know what I would do. If it was just a yep, nope, yep, and it was for the podcast, I would probably just cut it and say, all right, like, you know.
You're on Twitch, though. You're on Twitch right now.
Yeah.
You're on
live. If I have.
No one.
Whew,
You got an audience of 500 people sitting there, rapt attention, and this dude's not fucking speaking.
I would probably, at that point, go to the chat and just start asking chat questions, because the chat, no matter what, you would just be, they're always like, ask them about this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, hey, blah, blah, here in the chat says just anything to get them talking. 2 or 3 minutes. I think I would have more topics written down to, I personally would take up more than 2 or 3 minutes of trying to get them. But yeah, I know what you're going for. Yeah. So yeah, it would just be, and if it was live on Twitch, I mean, you might do 10 minutes with them, cut it and talk to the chat and be like, ooh, that was rough, wasn't it? And it would be like, you know, and make it a thing or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I think if the guest came on and was just difficult, I have no problems cutting it and be like, you know what, you're wasting everybody's time.
Fair. Well, that I was actually what the next question, part of the question I was going to ask you is, what do you do if the guest is being kind of combative? I'm sure you've had that happen. I mean, everybody's kind of had, I know I've had it in interviews that I would assume you have.
Combative.
Yeah. They're just, maybe they're just, you know, they're just not feeling it or whatever. And they're just being argumentative, right? Personality class. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I had an interview recently where I thought the guy was rolling his eyes at me every time I asked a question. So I blatantly stopped it. I'm like, dude, are you rolling your eyes at me? Like, I've never really gotten combative with the guest, but I was like, are you thinking? Or are you rolling your eyes? Like, these are dumb questions, because like I was like getting annoyed by it. And he's he was like, no, these are really good. Some of these I've never heard before. But at the time I was like, is this guy just rolling his eyes every time I ask a question?
That's amazing.
Yeah, so
that's amazing. Aaliyah, what else do we want to ask about this part of the question before we move on to the next one? You're on mute, by the way.
For the first time I muted myself this whole interview. I think we covered that topic pretty much as well as you can. It does sound like sometimes it's just not salvageable.
Yeah. I would agree. Actually, I got one more part before you ask your next one, Aaliyah. I want to go into on that. So let's say that you got a guest that talks too much, which we've all had happen. Right. How do you get them to kind of be a little bit more concise with their answers versus going all over the place, if you can?
Ooh. Well, I think with podcasting, I think I would let them go. Like, just let them talk. You know, if it's a timed interview and they're going off the deep end with answers, you know, I guess you really just try to get the, like I said, the album title, the release date, and then let them go. And then, you know, make sure to keep track of the time and tell them, all right, well, it was great talking to you. And then you just basically have fodder for the next time you interview them that you still have notes written down. I think that's what I would do. I think I would, if a talker wants to talk, you know, let them go.
Fair. And then the last part I have on this is, have you ever had a guest show up drunk or completely high and unable to do the interview? And how did you?
I've definitely had high guests, but nothing like too belligerent or anything where you couldn't get anything out of them. I don't think I've had anyone drunk. I did an interview. I did an interview one time after drinking, and I vowed never to drink again when it came to interviewing.
It was you that was drunk when you were doing an interview?
What happened was the first, there's a Rock and Pod Expo in Nashville every year. Yeah. And the first one they did, when I got there, they needed everything was set up, but they failed to have an extra recorder on hand. So I didn't really have any interviews set up. So I was like, you guys can use mine. So I'm thinking, I don't have a recorder. The booze were a flowing. So I just started, you know, drinking with everybody. It was an expo, so we were just walking around having drinks, talking to people. And then all of the panels were over, and they're like, here's your recorder back. And then if you guys want to go back in the archives, it was my interview with Toby Wright. He mixed Injustice for All, or he was an engineer on Injustice for All. And he produced Korn's Life is Peachy and Seven Dust's home album, you know, some good stuff. So I'm sitting there talking. Go ahead.
I found it already. Well, you're
talking. Like, I can see him tip, tap, tapping.
but if you go like that interview got like PRP and Blabbermouth and everything picked it up, because in the interview, he said that he wanted to remix and remaster Injustice for All. This was before the box sets and all came out. Ooh. But if you listen to the interview, I'm like, Injustice for All, like I'm slurring my words. It's awful.
Nice.
It's like one of those like just cringe moments. I've heard other people listen to it. They said you can't really tell, but I'm like, I can tell. Like,
fair. I gotta listen to this.
Plus, it's at an expo and there's other people talking around you, so you got to be kind of loud too. So you're kind of like trying to talk over and slur your words. So,
nice.
But yeah, I think, pretty much from then on, I don't think I've ever drank and done podcasts since then.
That is probably, that is actually the highlight of this interview so far. I think it's your question next, Aaliyah.
Actually, I have a quick question. Have you ever interviewed more than one person at the same time in the same interview?
Yeah. I feel comfortable enough a lot of the times emailing publicists saying, here, this is what I would like to do. Because sometimes they'll say, hey, can you interview X and X? And I'm like, I really like doing one-on-one because I don't like the interview to be like, you know, what did you, you know, how was recording the new album, Curtis? Okay, same question, Aaliyah. You know, it's like, it's you know, you kind of get those going on and stuff. So you definitely, I don't like doing multiple guests because I do feel like that, like Stay Puft with the Death Metal Roundtable, like that would have, I would have thrown up if they had asked me to do that, because it's like, okay, Corpse Grinder, what do you think? Okay, you know, just like going around the table of
being more of a mediator.
Yeah.
They did an interview with four people yesterday in a band. I think it was Mesa. I don't know how the fuck they did that. I would have gone insane.
They were all on different webcams too. Yeah. So different locations.
I couldn't do that. Yeah. Especially, there's always going to be like one band member or two band members that are like the four or five that don't talk.
Right.
Always. And then you feel like a dick. And then it's just like, okay, what's the point of them even being there? You know what I mean? But anyways, I cut you off, Jimmy. Go ahead.
No. I was basically saying the same thing. You know, yeah, you get, especially if they're not in the same room. Like I did the same room a couple of times with Twitch where the, you know, two of the guys would be in the band, but I think they feel weird bouncing off each other. And then, you know, you're trying to like pull stuff out of them. And if they're not talking, then you're like I said, you know, same question, Curtis, you know, because you assume that if you ask kind of a, how did you guys enjoy touring with Morbid Angel? And one of them says something, I'm like, well, what do you think about that, Kurt? You know, like second person.
Yeah, you would think they would have like kind of bounce off of each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you brought up the Lena Scissorhands, but like I did one with her, Carla Harvey and Heidi all together on one interview. And I would ask a question and it would kind of bounce into their room. And then like Carla and Heidi and Lena would all kind of answer each other, and then like one of them would bring up another point and they would kind of bounce for a second before it came back to me, rather than okay, how, what do you think now, what do you think now, what do you think, you know?
Yeah,
well, that's a pro tip for bands if they're in an interview with multiple people, do that. Yeah, one second,
ooh.
Curtis, but the reason I brought that up was because of Curtis's earlier question about someone talking too much. And in a situation where you're interviewing multiple people, that is the one situation where it could be a problem that you might need to intervene. Have you ever had that happen?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Curtis, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to kind of flip the tables a little bit just for a second here, because you're in a band and you have had to do that. How does it kind of work on your end, just out of curiosity? I'm sorry, Tumi, I know you're the focus of the interview, but I just had to ask that question because she's had to do this. So how does that work? Yeah, how does that a band member.
Oh yeah, like people always want to talk to the singers or the girls in the band, but we're not the songwriters. So I would always be like, okay, well, I'd like to have the songwriter on the interview as well. Because people are going to ask about the writing process and we don't know anything about it. I mean, we know about it, but it's like, you want to hear it from the source.
Right.
Yeah. I kind of always push to have the songwriter on, especially since we're a newer band and we're just starting to do interviews. But yeah, we would always try. And I think as we had more interviews, we got better at bouncing off of each other and not just like answering it and then sending it back to the interviewer.
Yeah. Well, even in my like history of bands back in the day, like our singer probably was not the person you wanted to talk to, but he was probably the one everyone wanted to talk to, you know.
Exactly.
Like where, you know, the guitar players or me or the drummer might be a better interview, but you know, nobody wants to talk to the bass player.
No, never. Also, well, maybe you can answer this. Why does everybody want to talk to the female? Like, why? Like, I always get that question. Like, always.
Curtis, how can you ask that question? It's so.
I gotta ask. Like, what? Like, what is like? He's an interviewer. I just gotta ask. Like, I always get asked. Like, if there's a girl in the band, they want the girl.
Girls get clicks.
Is that what it is? Is girls get clicks?
I shouldn't answer. You should answer. You're the professional. What do you think?
I mean, typically, a lot of times it's because that most of the time they are the focus of the band and they're the vocalist. You know, you kind of get that, the vocalist side of it, you know, you get a ton of bands with female fronted bands out there. So I think a lot of times it just kind of falls into the singer category. I interviewed Sean from White Zombie years ago, like the bass player from White Zombie. And that was just a cool one because she was such a focal point of the band as the bass player, because everybody that was a teenager when that, you know, that band came out, you know, loved them some Sean from White Zombie. And she was a great interview. It was a fun interview to have. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. Why do you want the females in the band or whatever, the girls in the band to come on the show? But, you know, I mean, maybe it is the clicks. I don't know.
It could also be because we're in metal and rock and it's a male dominated genre, so you want some variety.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I always find it tough to kind of interview the ladies because you don't want to be like, so what's it like being a girl in a band, and what's it like, you know, did you get creeped on all the time, or you know, you try to stay away from those questions, but you can easily fall into that pit of you know, I think the best answer to something like that was Megan Target from Vexed came on the Twitch, and she was talking about how she hates like the fetishized by being like a female fronted band. And I was like, man, that's a really cool way to look at it, because you know, the you know, Heidi would come on and talk about, you know, female fronted is kind of a bad word, but she's like, you know, it's kind of an empowerment thing with a group of everybody kind of getting together and making it a kind of a girl power type thing, you know, rather than, you know, because growing up, I mean, I'm, you know, when I was a teenager, there was very few women in metal, and now it's, you know, you almost don't have a band without a female member.
Yeah, no, I agree on that. I mean, I think in my opinion, Aaliyah might not like my opinion on this, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think
here's the end of the podcast.
Yeah, she could bump me in the words. No, I don't think she would. In my own opinion, I think probably what needs to happen with the interviews is you have to kind of have it like you just talk to everybody the same versus gender. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, when I'm dealing with Aaliyah or I'm dealing with any of the other people that I work with, it's all female, and I treat them the same as I would like if I'm talking to you, right? So and I think if you're doing an interview, that would be the way to do it. But I want to hear your opinion on that versus, because like that is true, like a lot of the times it goes into the gender type thing, but anyways, your opinion if you may.
Well, you know, but you also can't overlook the gender or the race or the or anything like that, you know, because metal for the most part is a very white male dominated business. So if you get you know, Diamond from Tetrarch on, you know, she's a black woman playing guitar in a band, you know, so you've got, you kind of can talk a little bit about that. Or I think maybe not, I didn't talk to LeJean about this from Seven Dust, but maybe, you know, Clint from Seven Dust a little bit about the issues they've had having a African-American front man, you know. Mm. And he was, you know, he brought up, because they were also they had an African-American front man, but they also had Confederate flag guitars, you know, like they, so yeah. they were kind of, I was like, you know, and they were, you know, I think they said, and I was obviously clickbait or blabbermouth pulled it, but, you know, kind of having that imagery back then was probably a mistake, but, you know, a sign of the time type stuff. But, you know, so you talk about that, and then you hear the stories of those guys going into bars in North Carolina when they were first starting out, and the guy behind the bar says something, you know, and you're like, oh, so yeah, so here we are. So you kind of have to, you can't not bring it up. You can't, you know, but you also have to, you also don't want to, I guess, have generic questions when it comes to it.
Yeah. What's it like?
You can find an interesting way to ask the question.
Yeah. So I think I'm done on that topic without us getting too controversial here. So yeah. I think it's a
question. Yeah, thanks, Curtis.
You're welcome. We'll talk about more controversial.
I guess I kind of brought it up, but not intentionally.
You did.
Sorry.
We'll blame
that's my Canadian sorry. So moving on then, what do you think is like the best interview that you ever done, and why was it the best?
Man, that's a tough one just because of the kind of the amount of interviews I've done. I'm just trying to think of the recent ones I did that really... I really, really enjoyed, I just did interview with Jelly Roll. He's a little more of a hip hop artist, but he's doing kind of crossover stuff now. And I just really fell in love with one of his latest singles and fell down the rabbit hole. And we're also from the same town-ish area. So, you know, I knew a lot of his I didn't know a lot of his backstory, but I knew, you know, when he says he grew up in Antioch, I know exactly what that means. So, you know, we were able to really, kind of dive in, and I did an hour with him, probably could have done a couple of hours with him, and just really connected with him there. So that was one of my favorite interviews. You know, the Jason Newsted interview I did for the Black album was yep. You know, a bucket list kind of thing. But there's so many of those interviews where you, like, my favorite ones are when I walk away going, is he my new best friend? You know, like, because you walk away and you're like, you hit it off, and you really feel a good connection. And you know, and those will be the ones that you know, anytime they release anything or need some press or whatnot, you know, they're always going to come back on the show.
So who do you want to interview realistically that you have not interviewed? Because I mean, like, realistically, not like, you know, dead people or someone that's like
right,
Mick J, somebody like that type person.
I mean, it really just boils down to like some of the, you know, just some of the bigger names that I haven't gotten yet, you know, James Hetfield, Dave Mustaine, you know, Rob Zombie or something, like, you know, like that. Like, you know, I've had members of the bands on, but, you know, that's not necessarily the singer, you know, everybody wants a singer.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, with Megadeth, obviously everybody wants Dave. Who else, like, who else right. Do you want to talk? Really?
Right. Hey, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I don't know who else, just Ellison, who you already talked to, right? So
I've interviewed him multiple times.
Yeah. So where was I going with this? But top three people that you want to talk to that you have not spoken to. That's the exact question for interviews.
Top three. For my fandom, Rex Brown, Pantera.
Cool.
Which, you know, I should get eventually, you would think.
Yeah, I think you'd be able to, yeah.
Chino from Deftones. I'm wearing my Deftones shirt today. How about that? And I don't know. I think, you know, it's going to be somebody dumb like Lars Ulrich, you know, like, you know, just an easy one to throw out there to be like, that would be a fun interview.
That would be. That would definitely be. You wouldn't want to do Dave Mustaine, eh? He wouldn't be in the top three.
He's number four.
Number four? Be number one for me. what else do we got here? Oh, last question, it looks like. So give us a top tip for an interview. The number one tip that Josh Toomey has for doing an interview that will take you on the road to success from being a poor interviewer to being the tip top of your profession as a podcaster / interviewer / YouTuber, whatever you want to call yourself.
Journalist. Professional journalist. I just try to relate to the guest. You know, that's the main thing I can say. Like when you talk about doing research for bands, you know, just go through, and if you see something in the Wikipedia or here on another interview and you have a life experience that's similar to that, or anything you can latch onto and you can relate to. And so when you do interview them about the certain subject, you're like, you have a knowledge of it and you can kind of bounce off of it. There's been a few interviews I've done where you start looking into their, you know, their history, and you start hearing other interviews and you're just like, I got nothing here.
Yeah.
But the ones where you can really truly get in and find a common ground, I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, and plus, I mean, we're all fans of this music, so it's not going to be too hard to find. If you hear them talking about, you know, their favorite band is Black Sabbath, then it's easy to bring up, oh man, well, you know, would you say that, you know, Volume 4 is their best or something? Like, you know, you can, and then they perk up because you're talking about something that they like, and you can also go back and forth, and, you know, just anything you can do to, I guess, relate to the guests in any way you can.
Actually, I do have one more question. If Aaliyah's got enough time, Aaliyah, do we have enough time to do another question or two? Okay, cool. Mr. Toomey, do we have enough time to do another question or two?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm as long as you need me.
Ooh.
Not me.
Oh. Well,
actually, one or two max.
Okay. Well, it's only like one or two. He'll probably take care of the next question with this one. So let's say that you're put on the spot to interview a guest. Like, let's say you're at a festival or something like that, or you're at a show, and then you get an opportunity to interview someone that you weren't expecting to interview. Like, let's say Lars Ulrich popped up, or it was like someone who's in a fairly well-known band, but you're not very familiar with, maybe. So you're not prepared. How would you go about doing that interview without not being prepared, kind of on the spur of the moment, without looking stupid and being professional? How would you do it?
A festival, I would probably, you know, I mean, Lars is obviously going to be easy because that's just knowledge you have in your brain.
Yeah.
I'm just, but like any big band that comes along is just like, no time to look at your phone, no time to pull up anything. Just have a conversation. Like honestly, that would be where you would go. You might ask for the, like I said, the particulars of what they're touring on behind or whatnot. But, you know, I've done enough of those festival interviews to where, you know, the easiest question of the day is, you know, who are you excited to see? Oh, you want to go see Anthrax? Oh, dude, I saw Anthrax, blah, blah, blah. Have you seen them before? You know, boom, boom, boom. You know, you've got a little bit of common ground to talk about on there, or, you know, I could probably pull out a decent little 15, 20 minute interview at a festival with somebody I don't know.
Let's say it was, just as an example, I'm assuming you don't like this band. If you do like this band, that's totally fine. It's Andy from Black Veil Brides. You're put on the spot, given an opportunity, not Fest wants you to do it. You got to go. I'm assuming you don't know much about them, but if you do, that's cool.
Right.
Bam. What do you do?
Well, first off, I would say, hey, you know, notfest.com. Obviously I know Ryan J. Downey. Ryan J. Downey helped write your autobiography.
I didn't.
You know, oof. Like, so
wow. Like,
got it there. I know you're from Cincinnati. Wow. How did you feel about the Bengals making the Super Bowl? You know, wow. Like, I mean, just like, you know, you can pull it out there.
Wow. That's 7 years of experience right there.
Wow, that's pretty good. Okay, cool. I think I've wrapped up all my questions for Mr. Toomey. How about you, Aaliyah?
I think that's great. I think we're good. Cool.
Before we wrap up, though, do you have any final words you want to say before Aaliyah gives her outro?
Just check me out on Knotfest YouTube and talk to me with Joshua Toomey over on the Knotfest YouTube podcast app. Whatever you listen to your favorite podcast on, come check me out. iTunes and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that good stuff.
Nice.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on again. And until next time, everyone make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C-Squared.